Are you blessed or are you cursed with a strong imagination and a spiritual thirst? Do you wanna confide about the darkness inside? Come and talk about it on Self-Worst.
Okay, hi. Welcome to Self-Worst Podcast, I guess. I'm Brad Pearson, host of Self-Worst Podcast with Brad Pearson. How's everybody doing? The vibes are bad. The situation is bad. Not going to sugarcoat it. We are in a bad spot, folks. We're in the bad timeline. I think we all know that by now. Yeah, I gotta say, I wasn't shocked, but it still doesn't feel good. So, like, it seemed like people paying attention to, you know, the election were mostly saying there was a good chance that Kamala was gonna win, so I was kind of like, okay, whatever, I guess. And I don't want to sound like a Monday morning quarterback or nothing, but I will say that I had a bad feeling. And I had a bad feeling in 2016, but then I had a bad feeling in 2020, and I was wrong then, so I don't know. I didn't know what was going to happen. If you'd asked me on the day, it'd been like, I guess 50-50, but I am nauseous and feel bad. So, I don't know. Guts saying, yeah. And so, here we are. We've been here before. I don't know. I don't know if it feels worse or better than last time. I think at least last time there was an immediate swell of anger, and this time, I don't know, there's less shock but also less anger and less momentum to direct any change. Am I reading that vibe correctly? I think people just feel downtrodden right now, and hopefully that changes. I don't know. You know, when I started this podcast, I was unsure whether to make it political or just focus on mental health. But obviously since then, I've decided to make it political, because the personal is political, the political is personal, and it must be abundantly clear right now how much of an effect politics and the state of the world has on an individual's mental health. Like, you feel it right now, don't you? And I, for one, I'm upset and angry, and I think a lot of other people are too, and that's okay, and I think it's time to take time to process those feelings, and that's fine. I want to say this, though. I think a lot of people's takeaway from this is that Kamala lost because this country is just irredeemably racist and sexist. And there is definitely a lot of that in play. That is a valid observation. I'm not going to argue with that. Of course, there is racism, sexism, bigotry abound in this country. But I don't know if that tells the whole story. I'm angry with people who support Trump or turn a blind eye to the bigotry and race baiting behind him. And I'm angry, of course, at the Republican Party, but I have been my whole fucking life, and I'm directing that anger elsewhere this time. I think I'm more mad at the Democratic Party. Trump got 72 million votes, and that's 3 million less than in 2020. So his support didn't grow. And there are about 244 million eligible voters in this country. So it's not a mandate, and it doesn't indicate that everyone in this country is a frothing at the mouth, goose stepping, Sieg Heil racist. I just don't think that's true. is there, but I don't think those people are even close to the majority. I want to have more faith in humanity than that. Kamala lost between 14 and 16 million voters from the Democrats in 2020. She's like down from 2020. That amount of votes. And that's her failure, not the voters' failure. This isn't on us as individual voters. Like, there's going to be a lot of finger pointing. There already is. It's already starting. And a lot of it's going to be directed at the left. And the thing is, there are 14 million people out there. 14, 15, 16 million. Depending on, I don't know, what set of data you're looking at. Who, frankly, don't engage that much or that often or that deeply with politics outside of their own personal experience and what happens like right in front of them. And we should perhaps look closer at the Democratic politicians and strategists and consultants and pundits whose job it is to understand these things and understand these people, and they still fucking failed. They get paid a lot of money to analyze this, and they still don't know what the fuck they're doing. If I was as bad at my job as political consultants are, I wouldn't last a week. I would be shit canned right away. And yet, they're going to continue to get paid six-figure salaries to just pull shit out of their assholes and put it on a plate. And I think that's who we should be mad at. We should be mad at people who are advising political parties to just colossally misread the room every fucking time. She didn't lose by a margin of third-party voters. It ain't on Jill Stein or anybody else. She lost because she failed to inspire 14 million people. What was the platform? What were her offers to regular people? What was her appeal other than I'm nice and decent and not an asshole like Trump? You can't run on joy and good vibes. I'm sorry. I wish you could. But 14 million people have been looking at shredded corpses lying in rubble for a year and paying $9 for a pack of eggs at the grocery store. And then they're supposed to get on a bandwagon of joy and fun. And like, do I think Trump will be better about Gaza and inflation? Of course not. But if you're not offering an alternative vision, what do you have? Not enough people were willing to put aside images of a Holocaust and vote for Harris, but enough people were willing to put aside Trump's flagrant bigotry and vote for him. So that's the compromise that people are making. And like, would a pro-ceasefire candidate have won? I do not know. Might have also lost. The Israel lobby is extremely powerful. We've already seen how they took out Jamal Bowman and I forget who else, but like, AIPAC will sink your campaign if you speak out. So I don't know if popular support would be enough. But I do know that at least then we would have been fighting and losing for something good that we believe in rather than compromising our morals and fucking losing anyway. And the Democratic Party isn't going to learn a goddamn thing from this. They're going to continue to tack right or tack to the center, which is moving right because there's no alternative. And they're going to be fine. They're going to keep making all their money and living cushy lives with healthcare and retirement and stock options and property. And Trump supporters, I hate to tell you, they're not going to learn anything from this either. When, not if, when Trump fucks this country up, it'd be great if they all saw the error of their ways and had a big come to Jesus moment and, you know, realize like, oh, fuck, this guy's an idiot. But if they haven't by now, they never will. Sorry, dude. They're just going to blame, I don't know, woke trans immigrants or whatever the fuck. There won't be any reckoning. There's not going to be a lesson. There's not going to be any contrition. That just is what it is. So I think the only people who have an opportunity for a teachable moment here are people like you and me. Regular folks with jobs and bills and not a lot of money. And so I hope we all take some time to think and dream and work, you know, get to work on a better future. And I don't know what that looks like, by the way. I'm stupid, too. I don't know if it involves a third party or what happens from here. I guess we'll all figure that out together. It'll be fun. And I want to take a moment to push back just a little on the doomerism. And I know that sounds crazy coming from me of all people, but here's the thing. Holding this attitude that I'm fucked, you're fucked, that guy over there is fucked, your dog and cat are fucked, everyone we know is fucked, it's not actually going to help us or our families or the people we love. Ask me how I know. It's like when a big, dumb authoritarian wins power, that's not the end of history. That's never been the end. And barring, I don't know, a thermonuclear war or a mass extinction event, things will go on in some way, shape, or form. And it's okay to be, you know, sad and scared and fucked up right now, but I want to humbly ask everybody to please not wallow in it. Because, like, when we think of the concept of doom and annihilation and apocalypse, I think it would do us good to remember that people have faced the end of everything that they know before. Native Americans experienced apocalypse. That was an apocalypse when the white men came and killed all their buffalo and took their land, took their language, took their culture, took their kids, put them in boarding schools, eradicated them. It was the end. Palestinians are experiencing an apocalypse right now. They're being bombed into oblivion as we speak. They're being starved to death. They're having everything taken from them, and they still get up every morning and put on pants and do what they've got to do with the day because they don't have a choice. So I don't know. Maybe this is a hot take. Maybe I'm a privileged white guy in saying this, but bear with me. All of us in the first world with our iPhones and internet and email jobs, for us to curl up in a ball of despair, that's privilege. So I hope that the anger and the call to action from 2016 and 2020 comes back. I hope the rage comes back. I hope the rubber meets the road soon. Maybe not today. You know, take a minute, process, feel, have a drink. You know, I've been keeping myself busy. I've been cooking. I've been doing yard work. I've been working out. I've been kickboxing, which is a strong recommend for this day and age. I knocked the bag off the chain this morning, which to me is always a good omen. It's going to be a good day. Go for a walk. You know, touch grass, look at a tree, look up at tree. Go for a walk, look at tree. It does good things to your brain. And the nice thing about the impending climate meltdown is it's warm out in like the middle of November. I went out in a t-shirt yesterday and nothing else. So do that, you know, do whatever it is you got to do. It makes you feel better. Work on an art, work on a, take your dog out for a walk. Do some self-care. Of course, have a nice meal. But then, you know, get to work on something. Join the DSA, join the Working Families Party, find local organizations. Think of the most vulnerable people in your life and how you can help them directly. Organize and unionize your workplace. And above all, don't ever, ever give another red cent to the Democratic Party in any way, shape, or form ever again. Fuck them. They don't need our money. It's a fucking money laundering operation. Do literally anything else. I don't care if you're just donating blood or working one night a week at a soup kitchen or cleaning up your local park. Do a thing that does not involve the DNC. So anyway, let's get to the episode, huh? I almost forgot. This week we're talking to Davidson Boswell. He's a comedian. He's gotten really into political analysis, and I think his takes are mostly pretty good. He's pretty on board. Smart guy. So I wanted to have him on the show and, you know, talk about how we deal mentally with all of this horror. So we recorded this a couple of days before the election. And look, sounds a bit wonky. I fucked up. He was coming in hot. We tried to adjust it. I thought it sounded okay in the recording, but it's still, I'm too quiet. He's too loud. I did my best to level it off. I'm sorry. It's flawed. Okay. I've had a bad week. All right. Anyway, let's go to the episode interview and get on with our lives, huh? So why don't we get started by just having you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do and how you got to where you are.
Okay. So I'll start with my name. My name is Davidson. I live in Harlem, New York. I started comedy about 10 years ago, 8 years ago at this point. Moved up to New York right after college. Started doing a lot of stand-up. And then during the pandemic, went through a bit of an existential crisis because comedy didn't really exist anymore for a second there. Well, not a second, about a year, you know. It was like,
yeah,
people were trapped in their rooms and stuff. So I started getting super into activism and, you know, the George Floyd protests kicked off. So I was very involved with those. And I, you know, was really disappointed by Biden's presidency. I guess he like claimed to be this kind of transformative figure and not much happened. Yeah, well, so
what are you talking about, Jack? He's the most progressive president since FDR. That's what that is.
Yeah. That's I guess that's the company line that they're going with. We'll see if it works I don't know if this is the last podcast you're doing before the election, but
I think this could age. Yeah, I'm releasing one this week, and then next week, I guess, we'll, you know, the cat will be out of the bag probably. So I don't know.
Right.
We'll see. It's going to be a whole new. Actually, it's not. That's the thing. It's not actually going to be that different.
No,
no matter what happens.
That's
kind of what's sad.
Right. It's like the speed of decline is what's going to, you know, change. Like, are we going to have a slow decline or a rapid one, depending on who gets elected? And that was kind of my awakening point. And a lot of people think that I kind of got popular online because I started talking about Palestine and stuff like that. But I was actually doing videos before that about like social issues as they related to like poverty in the United States. Like there were all these articles coming out, even from liberal publications, about how like liquor stores are being looted and things like that. And I was trying to basically tell people like, this is not just this random anomaly. This is a result of the political elite basically telling us, hey, we don't give a fuck about you. You know, just reminding us on both sides of the aisle, like you can eat shit and die, essentially, you know. So people there's like a nihilism rising in society. And then when October 7th happened, I put my kind of flag down and was like, all right, this is the start of a genocide, essentially. And then I've been doing content as it relates to that. And also just kind of the billionaire class robbing the American people for the last 10 years. So that, and that's kind of like the two planks of my, you know, following, I suppose.
Tell me a little bit about your like political awakenings and what brought you to, you know, activism.
So I guess like the first political awakening was Obama's presidency, particularly as it related to not going after bankers or any, you know, insider trading or anything like that after that happened, because he campaigned on a platform of hope and change. And I think he benefited a lot from running in the wake of George Bush, who was like a comically inept president, you know, like this guy's like a war criminal kind of thing. So, you know, I was super inspired by him. I was still too young to vote for him when he ran for the first time. But already by 2012, I was like, this guy like might be a company man, you know, like this is like a little bit. Go ahead.
I mean, when you're talking about him following up George W. Bush, I mean, that even that nobody responsible for the invasion of Iraq was prosecuted.
Right.
And
right.
That's a big part of why we're at where we're at today. You know, why we can just keep just sending weapons and starting these endless proxy wars all over the planet, because there's no system of checks and balances, and it's just broad daylight kind of shit that they're just gonna do. And like people, and they're like, yeah, no, fuck you, we don't care. Like we're just gonna do that.
Exactly. I mean, like one of my favorite intellectuals to listen to is Chris Hedges, and he talks about this Gaza war being like almost like a testing ground for the elite, being like, if we can do this, we can do anything, you know, like if you'll let us live stream killing all these people, then we'll just do it again. You know what I mean? Like that, if like people won't put their foot down at any point. And yeah, I think like Abu Ghraib in Iraq, and then beyond that, it was like 2011 was Occupy Wall Street, and I saw how both the conservative and liberal media basically went after that event to basically call it meaningless. Like there was this coordinated campaign to get them essentially like, I guess festooned would be the word, as this like really fringe movement. Like they're like, these guys are crazy, you know what I mean? And I thought that was like really disingenuous, even for my like 21-year-old brain. I was like, okay, this doesn't make any fucking sense. And as you continue to go on, it doesn't seem to matter who is in office. Like, yeah, certainly Trump is worse than Kamala. You know, like I think I don't know what your politics are, but I would assume you agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's literally like the churn of like. Bankers are going to have all the power. Imperialism is going to march on. And your vote is just to stop the absolute worst thing from happening, not like bad stuff from happening. And so that's what kind of radicalized me. And then with October 7th, it was like the final culmination being like, okay, this is now going to be a prelude to genocide. And that's exactly what it was. So, yeah, that was kind of my, it was October 7th, It was Occupy Wall Street, George Floyd, October 7th. That was kind of the upward trajectory.
Those are your guys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's King, Queen, and Castle. Yeah.
Right. How was it received? I mean, how has it been? I mean, you're doing okay on Instagram. You're doing numbers, but
yeah.
I mean, just among your peers and you know, everybody else. How did it go with being so outspoken and sort of strident on, you know, about all of this?
Not well at all initially. A lot of my family members told me I was going to ruin my life. You know, that was the hardest part, was my mom and dad both telling me to like shut up, basically. Mm-hmm. And then my aunts got involved because they like casted a wider net. They were like, will somebody talk some sense into this kid? And a lot, you know, I told you that I started out as a comedian. There are comedy clubs in New York that are run by Zionists. You know what I mean? Yeah. People that like, so they have no interest in, I mean, but whatever. But it was particularly hard on a few of my friends who reached out to me. They were just like, people didn't really understand. And I think this really kind of cuts to the core of the issue of, I guess, like institutional racism or something like that, because no one can really understand why you would care, you know? And that to me denotes a much larger issue. Where I'm like, well, these are people getting killed. And you're like, well, you're not Muslim. You know what I mean? Which is what my parents were essentially saying. They're like, why do you care about this? I'm like, well, so you really devalue human life to that level where you don't understand. So that made it very isolating. But I will give Israel credit. They have killed so many fucking people at this point that my parents are now like, okay, you might have a point. You know what I mean? Like, so it's kind of wild how like nakedly evil it's been.
Yeah, because, well, that's one way to win people over, I guess. Just
right, exactly. And it's like horrible that, but that might have been the thinking behind the attack, is basically like, let's expose this fucking evil regime. But I take no pleasure in that or anything like that, but I have noticed that they've brought me back into the fold after initially being like, you're going to ruin your life. I was like, well, I kind of see the writing on the wall.
Well,
you know?
I mean, I don't know. I don't remember who said it is, you know, like liberals are always opposed to the, you know, bad things that happen throughout history, except for the current bad thing that's happening in history, you know?
Exactly.
And it's always this like later vindication of like, oh yeah, Occupy Wall Street had a point, and oh yeah, Bernie Sanders had a point, and oh yeah, the George Floyd protesters had a point. And it's like, yeah man, I don't know, like I wish you you had that attitude when we had the moment of leverage to do something about it. But cool, glad you're on board now, I guess.
Precisely. And that's so easy. And I always talk about this, how and I this is very annoying among liberals, but they need like Javier Bardem to play like a Palestinian, you know, that falls in love with a Jewish woman, like in a film that comes out in 2032. And people are like, whoa, did you even know how bad it was? You know, like Hotel Rwanda is a good example of that. Another example is like, I don't know, 12 Years a Slave, you know, these like incredibly melodramatic, very Hollywoodified, like attractive stars that are playing sympathetic heroes of a conflict that's so far in the past that it's so easy to be like, yeah, I would have done something. And the opportunity to do something is right now, but everyone's basically punting because it costs you material opportunities. Like I lost my comedy. I was running a comedy show and the owners of the bar kicked me off the show. Because they are Zionists. But I think it's pretty fascinating because they're both gay. And It's wild to me that
try being gay in Gaza line on you? Was that?
They didn't. I've had a lot of that line thrown at me, yeah. But they just like were like, we don't want the trouble or whatever. But there, I guess being you are the same as me. You're a white man who's heterosexual, so it's like it's difficult to like levy criticism. But I will say that it's fascinating to me that marginalized groups don't take issue with what's happening in a more robust way. Like, wouldn't like a gay person be like, okay, I kind of empathize with a group that's being trod upon, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they want to be.
Yes and no. I mean, like, there are a lot of queer people who have been showing up. There have been a lot of, you know, I mean, like, Jewish people have been leading the charge in many cases, you know, pushing for a ceasefire. And you go to these, like, protests and marches, and it's a very diverse kind of crowd because I think a lot of people from those groups, you know, like, they do understand the intersectionality is a very popular term among liberals until it's time to but like,
right.
Some people who do understand the intersectionality of it, they're like, oh yeah, no, this is the same sort of struggle.
Yeah. And so for me, that was what was fascinating about it, because I was like, these are older gay people who lived through the Reagan administration, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I feel like they would have some level of sympathy for a group of people that was being like systematically eradicated, and the West was essentially ignoring it. But maybe this is not a good line of thought to go down. Like, I should
there's something to be said for, like, you know, as straight white dudes, I think we do have a bit of an imperative, and, you know, to use our privilege in some way to, because we are in many ways just more bulletproof, you know,
insulated
mm-hmm. from all of this stuff, and so we can speak out, and different groups of people are going to listen to us and take us more seriously because we're dudes and we're white.
Yeah, that's true.
And different and lot less shit is going to stick to us as well.
Mm-mm.
You know, because we're white dudes, we're fucking cancelable. I mean, like, you can try
right.
But it's not actually, I mean, like, look where like Tony Hinchcliffe is, like,
I was just thinking of him when you said that.
Like,
yeah,
you can't actually, like, he's not going anywhere. Like, this is the, like, he's proof.
No, that was great for his career.
Yeah.
He's that that's gonna be great. Like, you know what I mean, that's the thing about, I mean, Joe Rogan having Trump on his podcast, Tim Dillon having JD Vance on his podcast. These things are just like, the controversy is the whole thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it creates clicks and money ultimately. But just to your original point, yes, it created a lot of like consternation, a lot of people being like, is Davidson okay? You know? and then as things have gone on, it's like, oh, this is like actually one of the defining causes of our time, which is kind of a fascinating flip that's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Like, people, yeah.
Where would you say you are on the doomer spectrum? Like, how bleak do you think the future is, and how do you reckon with it?
I mean, that's a good question. I think I'm pretty far on the doomer spectrum. I don't think it's going to be thermonuclear war, you know, like some people, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, people are like, yeah, oh, this is it, baby, the big one. I think it's going to be a series of increasingly worse environmental crises, you know, lack of water in the West, increasingly powerful hurricanes in the East, and there is going to be this brief moment of solidarity, I think, in the next like 20 to 30 years, where people realize that band together or nothing. But my only worry is that it's going to be too late by the time it happens, you know, like, because there is this vision of like people just realizing that we are all we have. And like, my mom lives in Western North Carolina. She was trapped by that hurricane that happened for like 4 days. No electricity, no running water, no cell service. It was obviously very anxiety inducing for everybody. But you kind of realize that in those moments, you start to walk outside and be like, oh, this is my neighbor. I've never talked to them before. But all of modern America, or not all of modern America, all of like the modern conveniences are now down. You know, the power grid's down. So the only thing to do is to connect with your fellow man. So I think like there might be some power in those things, like bringing people together. But yeah, just in terms of like the Doomer thing, I think it's too far gone, man. Like I think it makes a lot of sense why people are having a hard time justifying bringing kids into the world right now, for instance, you know, because it's really, really dire. And I think this election really illustrates the lack of choice, you know, between visions of the future. Like everybody's just trying to preserve something now. Like we're like, okay, it won't get crazy. That's kind of the Democrats' platform. And then the Republicans is like, we're going to go back 30 years. But there doesn't seem to be any vision of the future from anyone right now. They can't imagine things getting better. There's just like this slow decline mentality. And I think it's going to be climate change that ultimately brings about the end of days. Here's, how old are you?
I'm 40.
You're 40? Okay, so I'm 33. I think we're going to be the last people that live into our adult lives without some really crazy shit happen. You know what I mean? Like we might make it to like 80, 90, but I cannot imagine 2100 or like 2100, you know, that just seems.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of right there with you. I think that on a good day, I have a lot in terms of just apocalypse anxiety. In fact, on my other screen right now, I just have a bunch of shit pulled up, you know, about just doomsday OCD and intrusive thoughts and like how to manage that, because that's what I've been working on with my therapist lately, is just trying to kind of like compartmentalize it and not have it just the dread of the whole thing hang over every day and cause panic attacks. And like it's just, I've had to really like limit my news intake and social media intake because there is this thing where like you feel like, as somebody who's interested in politics and activism, like you have to be plugged in and live all the time on it and like have your finger on the pulse. But that gets to the point where you are just on this constant nail biting doom scroll like addiction, and then you're just unable to, not only not able to really help anybody, but unable to really help yourself and show up and be present in your life and like even like be a good friend, be a good boyfriend, be a good, you know, whatever, you know. And like, so it gets to that point. I don't know if it ever gets that way for you, but like
I remember making my ex-girlfriend really mad because I was like, things are gonna get worse. And she was like, well, what the fuck kind of philosophy is that? You know what I mean? Like, right. And it's really like, with relationships, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Like, I'm just curious, like when it does get to be a little too overwhelming, how do you, or does it get to be like too overwhelming with you? Because you seem to like really be engaged with it. And like, you're able to sort of take an unflinching sort of, approach to it and respond in real time to everything that's happening. I think that you know, that's not something that everybody can do. I think a lot of people have to just, because we're not, our human brains aren't even meant to take in this amount of input, you know, and this amount of like change and crazy stuff. Like, we're supposed to be like, our brains are still set up to where like we're living in tribes. We know maybe like 100, 200 people.
And yeah, max.
One
max.
Crazy thing happens like once every few months, you know, where like somebody comes in from the next village and they're like, well, there's fucking crazy shit happened over at that village. They got raided and everybody's dead. And you just, like, you spend time like thinking and talking about that. And you're like, oh, shit, you know, but like that's just happening all the time now. And our little monkey brains can't deal with that level of stress. So I don't know. How do you do it?
So I don't have any like practice or method or anything like that. The way I do it is I try and turn it into a narrative essentially for myself. Like, something that's been like, a lot of this is content creation, but it's also like public therapy for me. And I know that sounds a little bit hokey, but if I can like synthesize everything that's happening and turn it into something where I can be like, okay, have you noticed this trend in society? It kind of divorces me from the, I guess, myopic would be a good word, just something that's like incredibly navel-gazy and like self-interested. And I can just be like, put it out into the world and be like, do you guys feel this way too? And you get all this input back of people being like, yes, I do, you know? Right. And that has been like pretty revelatory for me, is like meeting all these people that want to reach out. Like, people reach out for me from all over the country and world at this point, just like wanting to connect and stuff like that. And I think that's been really cool. You kind of like find hope in the hopelessness in realizing that other people feel the same way, you know? Because I was driving during COVID when George Floyd and the political corruption scandal with Andrew Cuomo was happening and COVID was raging. I was losing it, and I had these roommates that basically wanted me to like shut up, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I didn't have, I was doing what I do online to their faces, you know? And that's not what anyone wants to hear. Oh, not what anyone wants to hear, but it's not what they wanted to hear, essentially. Right. And I kind of started to realize like, okay, I mean, I have a point of view. I have a message, whether it's like an optimistic message is up for interpretation, but it is one that resonates. So when I like basically found my people in a weird kind of way, that's how I've, and I have to limit my intake because like hundreds of people DM me about this stuff sometimes, you know, depending on how popular the video is. And you have to be like, okay, I don't want to hear you trauma dump on me. But I think like there are a lot of people who feel the same way, and in that I have found sanity and strength, if that makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just picturing your roommates walking backwards away from you as you're walking towards them ranting, like your front
face. Right. Yeah. They were the cell
were,
phone
like, right
camera
this close to you, and you know, just
yes, exactly
to get away from you.
Spittle on their face. Yeah. No, it was like, you kind of hone your voice and all this stuff, but eventually people just are gonna like tune you out or tune you in. And I'm sure there are people that have been like, yo, Davidson, block, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear this shit anymore. And I completely understand that as well. But for me, I guess I would describe myself as like pretty sensitive, and like, the fact that the world seems to be getting so much more brutal and violent is really affecting for me. So I felt like I had to say something. And because I did, the world has become less lonely. And a lot of people talk about how the internet like isolates you and makes you like incredibly closed off. And I've had the opposite experience with it. Like I've like, people are reaching out and I'm going and meeting them in person, you know, and talking to them about it. And that's been like revelatory. So,
yeah, I mean, it can do both things. It really, the internet is a very double-edged sword. It can connect people and it can completely isolate people. It just really depends on how it's used, you know?
Right.
So how has, you know, just your overall mental health been, I mean, lately, but just, you know, just in general, walk us through the journey. That's sort of the focus of this podcast. And I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, just what your mental health journey has been.
Yeah. So, I wrote an article about this, but I have a condition called misophonia, which is, a poorly understood condition, but you interpret certain sounds as pain, essentially. So when people like clear their throat, cough, sniffle, things like that, my ear makes it into pain in my head. And that's an incredibly isolating, you know, experience to grow up with, because first of all, when you're like young, like 4 or 5 years old, you're just yelling at people and like they don't even know why. You know, you're like, stop, you know. And then as you get older, it becomes weird, right? Because you're like, they know why you're angry, but they don't get why. And then as you get a little bit older, it just becomes isolating because you just want to like divorce yourself from those people and get away from them. And a lot of people say like, oh, well, why do you live in New York if you have that affliction, right? There's the most people in America around you. But I would say the thing that makes New York great is the, I guess, social mores here. Like, you don't need to give someone like a 3-paragraph reason why you're leaving dinner or going away from them. You're just kind of like, all right, I gotta go. You know, like I can't be around this right now. So that affliction has really hurt me in like relationships and in friendships and things like that, because inevitably, if you're with someone for long enough, they're going to get a cold. They're going to like start to cough and sneeze and hack and things like that. And then beyond that, I just have like a baseline level of depression. And I've become convinced that depression is just like a natural reaction to the world. You know what I mean? Like if you're well-read, if you like, you know, pay attention, like, I don't understand how you can not like, at some level, have kind of this base existential dread that pervades your being. So I have both of those things going on. But with that said, my mental health now is better than it's ever been, because I have kind of selected my, oh man, I'm really trying not to talk in cliches. You know how people are like, find your tribe, you know, they say that. So, but that's kind of what I did. You know what I mean? There's the people like, so as opposed to trying to like, when I took a little bit of a step back from stand-up comedy, because stand-up comedy is so image and relationship based, you're just always trying to like see where you're at in the hierarchy, you know?
Right.
But when you kind of like take a little bit of a step back from that and really evaluate the people in your life as to like how much they give versus how much they take, that has been really good. So ironically, after COVID, when you kind of like got an 18-month like self-reflectory period, you know, and then you can reemerge and be like, okay, this is actually who I am. I thought that was so, yeah, my mental health is good, but it's been a long and difficult journey, and I still struggle with close relationships because of my misophonia. Sorry if that was too long or rambling.
I mean, misophonia is one of those big ones. Like, I feel like it's become popular in a way.
Yeah.
Or it's become, like, more people know what it is, and I think I may be even guilty of misappropriating it or thinking that I have something like that, when I think I'm just irritable. I think I just lock on to certain sounds, people chewing in particular, and it just bugs me. It doesn't actually cause me physical pain, but it does just like irritate me to the point where I have to like take certain measures and like not like either not be around certain people as they eat or chew, or just like really like work on mentally focusing elsewhere, you know, try and have some music on or something so that I can pay attention to other than that. And that's really just like more of a ADHD side effect than it is like actual literal misophonia. I don't know, but it like, I think people will latch on to, and I think they mean well when they talk about certain afflictions and mental illnesses, and they'll say like, oh yeah, I totally have that too, when it's just like, well, what do you mean by that? And they're like, well, I don't like irritating sounds, you know, they bother me. And it's like, nobody likes irritating sounds, you
right.
know, it's this is different. This is like when a cough or a sneeze like sends a shiver up your spine.
You know, exactly.
It's a little different. right?
No, I mean, like, and the best way to describe it is like an explosion went off like near your ear. You know what I mean? So there's this like concussive kind of, you know, like, and that, and but in the same way, I mean, like, no one likes when someone, the worst is when someone is like talking and chewing, and you know what I mean? There's all these like sounds and inputs happening, and you're just like, okay, I can't focus on what you're saying because you're being disgusting right now. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody actually likes that. I don't know. Is there any particular treatment for this?
I was prescribed one, and I couldn't do it. There were these like earphones that like played white noise into your ear, but they're incredibly expensive and fragile, you know, and they cost $1,500 each, you know what I mean? If they break, yeah, so $3,000 total. And they just, all they do is just play like white noise consistently into your ear. It's, I mean, maybe there's
can't you just get AirPods and just listen to white noise?
Yeah, that's what I've done instead. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
but this would be like omnipresent, so there would always be something playing in your ear. So yeah, I've opted for that instead, just like nice earphones that I can do. And yeah, as I mentioned before, like New York is very impersonal, you know, like you just kind of move on from interactions. And if you lived in a small town, if you lived in even a mid-sized town, there'd be these people that like saw you be like, okay, I'm done. You know what I mean? And like leave. And then you'd probably run into them again, you know, but right. Here it's like, okay, that person's not gonna remember me, even though they had this like wet cough, you know? So I guess that's it. Where do you live, by the way?
I live in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, as you know, I walk around a lot and as a New Yorker, and podcasts, and lately I've just been doing ambient music has been like a big sort of grounding technique in order to kind of stop myself from mentally spiraling about just the state of the world and things like that, which is
it's not good.
No, not good. But it has been, you know, verified by my therapist as like a way to, you know, like that's a grounding technique. You have, you know, something that you can listen to instead of the constant chatter in your head, which is just nothing but negative thoughts. And it's really tough to get away from. But
totally.
To your point about just like depression just being a byproduct of living in the world, I mean, I think there is a lot of truth to that. And I think who is it? Terrence Ray?
McKenna?
Terrence from the Trillbillies podcast was talking about how there's really only so much like mindfulness that you can do to alleviate the fact that you are like in a society that feels like it's circling the drain.
Right.
You know? And there's really only so much kind of mental health exercises that you can do to drown out what is happening actually in the world. So like I've been reading this book, actually, well, I finished it, called Life After Doom by Brian McLaren. And, what that book talks about is just sort of reckoning with, you know, the reality of societies sort of crumbling and collapsing, and what that might look like and feel like, and how we're gonna deal with it, and what the aftermath may be, and sort of almost in a way, like, because he works as a he's a pastor. And so he's worked with people through like death and the grieving process, and like understanding, like, you know, like letting go of stuff like that. And so like he's almost doing that on like a societal level.
Damn.
He's just like, maybe we just need to accept our end and just be like, we've run our course as a species, and try and find some sort of acceptance and peace with that. And like,
one of the most influential things that came out during the pandemic was Bo Burnham's Inside.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you say the ocean's rising like I gave a shit. You say the whole world's ending it already did, you know? Like, yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, that's that concept. It's like, okay, the world has ended. What do we do with the kind of aftermath? It's like Fukuyama's like end of history kind of thing. Like, yeah. And you're, and if you view it that way, it can be a little bit liberating. It's almost like Camus or something. It's like you're like, nothing matters frown or nothing matters happy. You know, right. You can like, you can choose which side of that you want to be on. And that still, you're still anchored in that kind of like privilege a little bit. Cause you're like, okay, well, that's nice for me to say, you know what I mean? But I think that's probably where, if like a lot of people were to like boil down why they were feeling so anxious all the time, you know, it's because there doesn't seem to be a very articulated version for what a more positive future is going to look like. And people are collectively dealing with that and really, really stressed out about it, you know, because they're like, somebody give me some optimism. And no one's providing that. Yeah.
No, it's been a minute since we've really felt anything to the degree of like a collective moment of hope. You know what I mean? I think maybe the last time was like, man, maybe like early 2021 when the vaccine started rolling out.
You know? Right. That was a good moment. Yeah.
And like Trump was on his way out of office. And so we sort of felt like this like sort of moment of like, okay, cool. Maybe things will, you know, we'll improve from here. Like when Trump got COVID, that was a fun moment. Like there were
awesome.
Certain moments where like as a society, I feel like we all sort of were the overall gestalt, the feeling in the room was just like, oh, cool. There's maybe something nice on the horizon. But other than that, like since then, we just haven't had anything. It's been a few fucking years now. And like, we just keep getting up and making our coffee and going to work. Right. It's unbelievable.
Pouring the milk into the Special K and trudging to the WeWork. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. Like, I mean, so like, William Gibson, I think, had the quote of like, you know, people think the apocalypse is coming, but it's already here. It's just happening in different pockets all over the world.
Right.
And he said that shit in like the 80s, you know, and he was right then. And it's right now because like, you know, I think a big part of this like sort of dread that I feel is like the prospect of, you know, what's happening, say in Gaza, happening here on our doorstep, you know, and like what that would actually feel like to see your previous neighborhood be just leveled and, you know, like buildings turned to dust and rubble and, you know, dead bodies in the street and like what that would actually feel like for you on the ground as a person. Cause it's horrible enough taking it in through like your little phone, but imagine it in fucking 360.
I know.
It's like actually happening to you, you know, like the sound of explosions and shit like that. Like that is what really bothers me. And I guess in some, you know, to some degree, like that's a little bit, that anxiety is a tad selfish if I really want to intellectualize it, because it's like I'm worried about it happening to me more than I am worried about it happening right now to somebody else. But like, I don't know, man. Like,
I am me,
and like I do live here, and like this is my block and my apartment, and like, you know, my girlfriend and dog in this apartment, and it would make me more sad if that got actually blown up. You know?
I think that's a valid fear.
That's fair, right? That's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, I think so. I don't know. I think like that's kind of a lot of critiques of liberalism is like it won't matter until it happens to you. But I don't think those critiques are very fair, because it's like, I mean, no other animal in the animal kingdom like responds to something until it happens to them. We are animals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if something like electrocutes us or shoots us, I mean, we are blessed with empathy. But I want people to kind of exist a little bit more outside of themselves. But I read this interesting thing, like 54% of Americans read at a sixth grade level or below, you know, like we aren't dealing with a a baseline that is prepared to intellectualize, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you ever think about this, but your podcast is aimed at the top 3%, or not three, but top third of intellectual capability to even like take in these issues and like want to hear them, you know? And I know this sounds a little bit elitist.
Folks, if you're listening to this, you're very smart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not even very. I mean, 66%, you know, but it is like, it is wild that like, I don't know if you saw the Trump rally at Madison Square Garden.
I saw pieces of it. I ain't watched.
There
are
so many dumb people in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
It is wild. And it's like, and so like 50, like the average IQ is 100, which means there is less than half of that below 100, you know, and mental handicapped is 70, you know? So it's, you're trying to like do this thing where you're like, okay, don't you see that this could happen to you? And they're like, no, because those people look different than me and I'm this and I do this. And the fucking Democrats are causing the hurricanes and shit like that. And you're like, okay, well, we're absolutely screwed because, yeah, like your intellectual exercise that you did right now where you're just like, okay, Gaza could happen to me. It's like, in their minds, I think what that is that's over there. And who gives a fuck? Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's
and they deserve it in some way.
Right. Exactly. And they're
justification
like,
because right. There is this like the narrative.
They're not Christian or something.
Yeah. There is a desire, you know, I think a base human desire to like make the world a just place and believe that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. I think it's an incredibly naive and childish idea, but I think a lot of people want to cling to that, that like there is a reason that this is happening and that like, you know, there is some sort of universal sense of justice and checks and balances in the world. And it just doesn't exist, man. It's fucking
chaos. No. And I mean like, but even what you just said is like, and I mean, sorry, this is like so like primacy recency effect. Like I just looked at this yesterday, but I just think about like all these things that I'm like trying to grab people by the lapels and make them care. And like people really don't have the ability to think outside of like their like not even id. It's like some level below id. It's like the way that lizards respond to like a hot rock. You know what I mean? Right. It's like this is I'm comfortable. So I'm going to lay here, you know what I mean? And like they'll broil alive if they fucking do it for too long. But I don't think so. Here's the other thing that I have to tell you. I have to get my laptop charger really quickly. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to be right back. And this is something that's super frustrating to me. Is that the criticism levied against these type of arguments is that you are being elitist or that you're being what was said about Al Gore, that he was like basically being arrogant or being like ooh like talking down his nose at something. But the issues are so fundamental. It's like I believe in climate change. You believe that Democrats control a weather machine. You know, and I don't think you deserve respect if you make an argument like that. You know, like I'm sorry. Like you sound so dumb and it's really difficult for me to be like, okay, yeah, that's that. We got to consider that point, you know, like if you want to bring them on board.
I mean, there is a serious problem, I think, in kind of any form of media, mainstream media, but also just, I mean, the podcast sphere too, I think is arguably worse so far as just credulity and the idea of balancing both sides and having like a fair and balanced blah 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 kind of point of view. And it's just like, do you have no sense of right and wrong, of good and bad? Do you have no principles or viewpoint or like any fixed sort of space in your intellect at all? Or are you just this like mush that gets shaped into whatever the person is you're speaking to, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, and it's funny to listen to these people. And this is a criticism that I always have about the New York Times and the New Yorker and like Slate and Washington Post, is these are all people who went to prep schools and then they went to Ivy League schools. They all knew each other. They all talked to each other. And then that is represented in the articles they present and the way they speak to one another. And it's a very closed system, you know, like you need to be hired. If you're hired, you're probably somebody's nephew or niece or like son or daughter, you know, so it's very closed off. And so that's what conservatives often balk at and respond to. But they are talking about stuff that is at least somewhat researched and cited. You know what I mean? So like it falls within some level of people being like, okay, that actually, like, you could go and look at historical data and see what they were talking about. But with the rise of kind of the manosphere with Joe Rogan or Daily Wire, you're just eternally shooting for the hip and aiming at the lowest common denominator. And it brainwashed, and this is, I mean, I'm going home to Thanksgiving in 3 weeks or a month, I guess. And I'm going to talk to these people who only listen to that form of media. You know, and that's deleterious to your mental health as well. You're like, wait a minute, you believe that? Like, and you're just like, you have your hair blown back when you hear it for the first time. They're like, yeah, they're like trying to turn like elementary school kids trans. Like they'll say that with like a straight face. And you're like, oh, you're so far gone that I can't even talk to you. You know, like what is even the point of engaging in any level of debate, if you just accept that as a fact, you know, I don't know if we're way too far off the reservation at this point.
Okay. To kind of bring it back a little bit, how are you at, you know, the old AA saying, accepting the things you can't control and controlling the things you can't accept?
Not good.
Right.
Yeah. I think I bristle at that sentiment because I don't think activism would ever be possible if people like took that to heart, you know. I don't know if like Medgar Evers or Fred Hampton ever thought about, and I'm not comparing myself to them, but it just seems like a really pliant philosophy. People being like, okay, well, you know, this is the way the world is, you know, the way the world is. David Graeber, this intellectual I like a lot, he said that the greatest hidden secret of the world is something that we make and could just as easily make differently, right. You know, and that philosophy is counter to that, I think. Yeah. What about you?
I try, I try and strike a balance in that. And, I think I look a step beyond just like allowing that to let me set into apathy. I try and look at it in more of a, I don't know, like a mindful Eckhart Tolle kind of thing where it's just like, no, you don't have to like what's going on, but you do have to accept what's happening, you know, as the current reality, you know, like, okay, so like our tax dollars are going to weapons that are slaughtering families and the political class is owned by billionaires. I don't like that. But it is the reality that we are in. It is the square that we are starting at. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think trying to find some form of serenity with that and some sort of peace with that, even though I wish that to change, is and not letting it just spin me out emotionally is more the trick that I'm kind of getting at, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, if you do take the posture that I have, which is like talking about the ills of the world all the time, often feel licensed to come at you and give them what they're struggling with as well. You know what I mean? And that's where I have to set up boundaries and be like, okay, this is what I'm prepared to deal with. You know what I mean? Like, I can't take on everything at once. Like, and so like people will often be like, oh, why don't you talk about like Sudan or the Congo or Chile or whatever? And I'm like, because I'm one person and that's insane. You know what I mean? Like I can't.
Yeah.
And like you can splinter yourself into like 20 different causes and affect none of them, or you can go hard on one and maybe make a change, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, yeah. I've found like, I've always found arguments like that really disingenuous, because it's another form of whataboutism for one thing. And it's,
right.
And it's also like, I don't know, because our tax dollars are going to a certain place, you know,
they're right.
Not like, exactly. It's, we're not as actively involved in what's happening in the Congo and Sudan. I'm sure we are in some way, but not as right. immediately, not,
yeah.
you know, and it's not something that our government could easily put the kibosh on, you know?
Right. Right.
And so like, it's different. And yeah, you're right. Like if you just keep piling on more and more things, then you're never gonna get anything done. So it's important to sort of focus on one or two things that you actually want to work on, right?
Right. Yeah. I think there's a big also thing of like, there's so many apathetic people in the world. So when you do find someone who like cares, or at least claims to care, there's like pressure on them to do everything. You know what I mean? Because like, it would be, I mean, you've probably, I was talking about this on my last Patreon episode. How easy would it be to just be a conservative podcaster and lean into grievance and get a bunch of followers that like pay you money to talk about how immigrants are ruining the country? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and you would never have to read, you would never have to like, you know, expand your horizons at all. You could just like completely lean into grievance and people would never expect anything from you. And so the opposite take is like, we're going to try at least. And I think sometimes people are really frustrated that those people don't do more, but I would say, aren't you glad they're trying? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're doing their best. Yeah.
Yeah. There is, I mean, only so much that a person can do at the end of the day. And that's another thing that I've been trying to like sort of remind myself and just be like, I'm just one guy. I have
right.
the circle of influence that I have, such as it is, which isn't very big. And you have to kind of do whatever it is you can with that small amount of influence. And that's about all we got. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say like, yeah, it's a mental health podcast. My mental health is not that good, but it's also like better than it has ever been. You know what
That's
I mean?
Good. Okay. Yeah. I do.
So it is, it's all about comparison. You know, you can only be who you are. Kind of, we were talking about that earlier with the Gaza.
Yeah.
Like thinking about bombing your own city and stuff like that. And when I compare it to when I was like 25, doing a lot better. So, I mean, it's just.
Good.
Yeah.
Are you in any form of therapy now?
No, but I go to a psychiatrist. I take Prozac, and I do have therapist friends that I talk to, like people who are therapists that like, and I don't lean on them in this like weird way, but like they give me a lot of like good reminders and stuff like that. But no, I'm not in therapy. Do you find it helpful?
I do. I think it's, I've found it really helpful to just sort of have a neutral party to sort of check what's been like really going on in my head every week or so, to just be like, is this a serious concern or am I just like spiraling about this for no reason? Is there a way that I can stop, you know, having this or that sort of anxiety about something without completely ignoring it or turning my back on it, you know?
Right.
And so like, I think it's important that like, it's important to me that my therapist is, you know, like roughly my age, like she's a millennial and I think has some understanding of where I'm at in terms of how I look at the world and, you know, what's going on in the world. Because I think I had this one therapist who's just this like old ass dude, looked like, you know, the TV actor Jack Klugman. He was in the Hot Couple. He looked like him. Mm-hmm. It was like this old ass dude. And like, I was trying to tell him about all of my concerns. And this was like way back in like, '05 or something like that. It was, you know, it was in like the Bush era and the Iraq war. And I was all concerned about like peak oil and climate apocalypse and all of this stuff. And he was just like, what are you talking about? You know, just wasn't able to like really like
invalidating your concerns.
It just wasn't working out at all. So like, I think it's important to like have somebody who's sort of on your level with a lot of that. But the other thing is, I think that like, and I've been talking about this, actually with them, with my therapist, is wanting to find groups of people who, are feeling the same sort of anxieties about the world, but, and talk to them, but not in a way where we're just going to rile each other up and whip each other up.
Sure.
And this is like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like frenzy, right. Because like, mm-hmm. that's not what I'm trying to do. Like I can do that shit on my own. And like,
yes.
that's what's been happening like on Twitter a lot. Like every time like World War III trends or whatever. And like, mm. like a fucking like panic attack, you know, like that's not helping anybody. Mm-hmm. It might be helping people in a way of like venting and having some like gallows humor about what's mm-hmm. going on. But like, I think they're also, I've been looking for it. I don't know. Like your listener, tell me if you know of anything like this, of just people trying to like kind of distance themselves from, the discourse in, and talk about how that just stresses them the fuck out all the time. And how to have a healthier, more balanced relationship and some boundaries with everything going on, so that you can kind of just live your own fucking life and actually show up for the people in your life.
Yes. Yes. That's really important, man, because I brought this up twice already, but like when I do meet with people who are aligned, that like they won't like, and I want this too, but like people are like, oh, finally I can talk about the things that matter. But those things are so depressing, so all encompassing, so hopeless, you know what I mean? There's like no solution to it, and that's awful for your mental health. So I've found, I mean, like, you don't need this advice, but whoever's listening to this, if you can find someone who will play basketball with you, play tennis with you, you know what I mean, like walk in the park with you, that is a lot better than like going to a bar and just unloading about, you know, because even if you work out and then talk about it, you're going to come at it with like a way clearer head than like, that's been kind of my salvation through all of this, finding someone who is aligned, but also active, you know, cause that's just like so much better. Yeah.
You've been doing some exercise part of your daily routine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm a tour guide for a living, so I naturally just walk all the time. Like that's one of the benefits of living in New York, is you're like, there is no option to not move. You know what I mean? Like it, unless you're, I guess, work remote and never leave your apartment. But tennis, basketball, and then to a lesser extent, long walks, you know. And it's peak, dude. Have you been outside?
Leaves are beautiful. Yeah.
So this is a good time to like kind of be thankful, you know. Like there's times in New York where you're like, I fucking hate this city, you know, and this is not one of the periods that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's great, and I think that's a good note to end on, folks. Go
outside, definitely,
and touch grass if you're not already like outside listening to this. Get outside if you can, and just try and like take a deep breath. Look at a tree; it's good. It does something to your brain, your mirror neurons, or some shit. you're relaxed. It calms you. It calms your nervous system, and it needs like people need to see nature and be among trees and plants and stuff like it is truly miraculous what that can do. And also exercise, get that heart pumping, hit a punching bag, hit a ball, whatever it is you got to do, you get out there and do it. Davidson, thank you so much for being on the show, and tell us where to find you.
Yeah, so just follow me on Instagram, Davidson Boswell, TikTok, Davidson Boswell, and then I have a Patreon called The Davidson Boswell Show. So if you like my rants, I go in kind of like longer form, like news analysis and things that are happening in my life on there. I'll have you on someday, man. It'll be fun.
Yeah, come on. I'd be honored.
Yeah. But thanks so much for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you once again to Davidson Boswell for being on the show. Check out his work. You know, you follow him. He posts a lot. If you follow him on Instagram, TikTok, whatever, you're gonna see his handsome face just walking towards you, strutting, making eye contact, and giving you his takes. And you're gonna grow to like the guy. Trust me. It's good to have around. And that's all. That's the show. Take care of yourself. Eat a big burger or some enchiladas. Guzzle a beer. Smoke a fat joint. Kick the shit out of a heavy bag. Do something. And then go do something more productive. That's all. I'm Brad Pearson. Until next time, don't stand directly under a pallet of bricks.